You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Joseph Holman, Lance Holman, Girls Basketball Coach at Joseph High School. Sorry about that, Coach. I got the Joseph and the Lance screwed up. How are you doing today, Coach?
Yeah, no worries. I'm doing well. I'm doing very well.
Good. After I screwed that up. Well, good. Thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. I'm excited to have you. You are our first 1A basketball coach on the podcast, and I'm excited to talk hoop with you. Let's start with getting us to know a little bit more about you, kind of your basketball career, your basketball coaching career, and how you ended up as the girls basketball coach at Joseph High School.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel very fortunate to have played for Dick Quinn in high school while attending Enterprise High School. We were pretty successful in high school, finishing second my junior year, losing only one game, which was a championship game, which was a little salty, to say the least. And then as a senior, we finished third. After which I attended Southern Oregon University, and just kind of continued to play pickup basketball and intramurals, which was a ton of fun. After college, I accepted my first teaching position back in my hometown of Enterprise, but I really, you know, didn't have any intentions of coaching basketball at that time. Football was kind of my main love, and so that's kind of the path that I took for those two years in Enterprise. And it wasn't until I accepted a job at Neocony on the coast in Rockaway Beach that I got interested in coaching basketball. It's funny. There was a boys JV position open at that time. And so I thought I was going in to interview for the boys JV position. And come to find out when I got to the interview, that had been filled before my interview. And so there was a JV girls position open. And so I did the interview and I accepted the position, which was strange because I hadn't watched a lot of girls basketball. Southern Oregon was very good. In the women's, with women's basketball, I'm very successful, but it wasn't really an interest of mine. And I remember coming home after I accepted the position and told my wife, she was very dumbfounded that I accepted a girls basketball position. But I'd really never been fond of girls basketball. So, and I never even coached basketball before. So, I didn't really know what I was getting into. And hadn't coached basketball in general at all. So, even though I was not interested in coaching girls basketball, it turned out to be one of the best decisions I've made as far as my coaching career. And so from there, I was the JV coach at Neocony for 2 years while also being the varsity assistant. And then the previous coach left. So I stepped in as the head coach for 2 years. While we were at Neocony. From there, we moved back to Allow County, you know, kind of my hometown. My wife's from halfway, just over the mountains, and began coaching in Joseph in 2005. And from there, I've coached high school and junior high throughout I think I've been here 16 years, so I've done both junior high and high school while at Joseph.
Fantastic. Throw you back to moving from the JV position to the varsity position at Neocony. You're the JV coach, varsity assistant. You become the head coach. What was kind of your, oh my gosh, I'm the head coach moment, when you took over the program at Neocony?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, practices, we of course changed, you know, what we were doing, that type of thing. But that first game, I remember sitting, we were in Sheridan. First game I coached as a varsity head coach. And I think before the game, I might have swallowed 5 pieces of Wrigley's, I think it was the wintergreen gum. I was so nervous. And so, you know, but then once the ball goes up, it's just basketball again. But that was so surreal and so, you know, you're in it. You know, you don't get to sit back and talk to kids and, you know, tell them, hey, do this, try, you know. It was all on me. So that was pretty surreal to actually be in charge at that point.
Yeah. Now, Nikani and Joseph are I would say, similar size, but Nikani might be slightly bigger. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. When I was there, I believe we were 3A. We were in the league with Portland Christian, Warrington, Vernonia, Napa, that Northwest League.
Right. So how did that change? So you were head coach at Nikani, 3A at that time, a little bit bigger, and then you went to Joseph. I'm curious, what were maybe some of the differences between being at Nikani and then at Joseph?
You know, very similar. You know, kids are kids, first of all. I think the adjustment was we went from, you know, 20-some players to, like, 16 players. And so that adjustment was a little bit more difficult. The travel was definitely quite a bit more extensive. But really, when it comes down to it, basketball, it, you know, it's a sport, and the fundamentals don't change, and what you're trying to do doesn't change. But definitely, you know, I grew up in a small town, you know, 6 miles from Joseph here. And so, it was home. So it felt good. You know, I relate to those kids really well. I grew up there, knew a lot of their parents and grandparents. And so, that transition was very easy. As far as that goes, you know, playing games on Friday, Saturday instead of Tuesday, Friday was a big change. You know, I remember driving to Portland on Tuesday. You had one practice, sometimes two, Sunday, Monday, play Tuesday, have Wednesday, Thursday, play Friday, and have Saturday off. Where here, you know, it's Monday through Thursday, prepare for two teams, and then play Friday, Saturday. So there's a few differences, but very similar. Oh, one of the interesting facts is Joseph's girls in, I believe, well, I shouldn't say the years because I'm, it's 82, 83. They were undefeated for three state championships under Coach Gary Father. He actually coached at Nikani in the early 70s.
I'll be darned. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so pretty interesting. And he would come to games. He's a great man. Or, you know, he's since passed. But our court's named after Gary Father, and but we both taught and coached at Nikani at one point in our career.
Yeah, and two schools you wouldn't think would have that connection, right? Just with how far geographically they are from one another. Kind of cool that there's that connection.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been asking coaches, you know, we're getting ready to go back to a quote-unquote normal basketball season, and we all kind of treaded water and figured it out last spring. But one of the things I'm just curious about in having to make all those adjustments and adapting to last spring's schedule is, like, what were some of your key takeaways from that season, and what were maybe some of the things that you learned and were able to do that you'd like to implement moving forward as a basketball coach?
I mean, I think there was just we've, you know, so much has been taken away from our kids the last 18 months. And so giving them something like basketball that seems somewhat normal has been huge for, you know, not only basketball, you know, to get them on the court and get them court time and learn your players, but that picked them up, you know, mentally and physically throughout the day. And even though it was a short, compact season, it allowed us to form kind of our new family. I mean, our big concept is family. That's something that we strive for, and learning everyone, you know, inside and out, and really trying to transition that to on the court. And so it really was a blessing last year. I don't know that I, you know, being superintendent and the head basketball coach, I had, you know, different responsibilities than I've typically had in many years past. And so for me, I did my job during the day, which included many different areas that I hadn't had to deal with in, you know, in the past. And so I relied heavily on my assistant to help with, you know, practice organization, those things. But just being able to watch our girls play, you could tell that basketball was filling a void that they hadn't, that had been left. You know, typically we're November through March. And so that, you know, it helped fill that void that they were missing. And so it was fun to see our kids just out on the court doing something somewhat normal.
Absolutely. I'm curious, so if I do my math right, you've been a head coach for approximately 18 years or so, started out not wanting or thinking you were going to coach basketball, and now you've been at it ever since you started. How has your basketball coaching, basketball philosophy changed from when you started, you first joined the basketball coaching ranks to where you are now?
Yeah, when I started, I was very much, you know, I felt the pressure, and put the pressure on myself and my players to win. And really, you know, less focus on basketball, but more on, you know, we need to win. And, you know, in turn, when I started out, I was very fiery, very passionate. Still am, but have toned it down quite a bit. But, you know, as I've progressed and grown, you know, I have a different perspective and just how much basketball is life and how many of those, you know, life lessons are in every drill you do and every game you play and, you know, all the times you meet to watch film and just how it translates. You know, I always say basketball is the easy part. And so really focusing more on the family aspect is what as I've grown, that's what I've focused on. And it's made us, you know, successful without me, you know, feeling like, you know, every play we run is a perfect play and we're not going to deviate. You know, it's really become more efficient, more in game situations and looking at ways that we can try to use our strength to our advantages. Where when I was younger, it was we're going to run this and that's it. And if you don't run it, you know, just the evolution and plus the group of as you become a head coach and you make those connections around the state and beyond the state, you know, being able to lean on those people and listen. I didn't listen when I was younger. You know, I thought, you know, you always kind of think you know it all. And so I've evolved in just communicating better, listening better, accepting criticism because it's out there, but also taking responsibility for what you've done. I believe I'm just a better person, you know, as I have progressed for the last however many years than I was when I was younger.
Yeah. Coach, you talk a lot about family and being big on that. I think that's awesome. And I think a lot of teams use the word family, but maybe aren't great at being intentional about teaching kids what that looks like and how to be part of a team family. Is there anything specifically you do to help your girls either, one, feel a part of the family or, you know, really be, you know, take that to heart and be a family on the court?
Yeah, we do really basketball is secondary to what we try to do. Basketball is the fun part. We are very intentional in our conversations and bringing kids in and making them feel welcome and spending more time developing those relationships, putting our kids in situations where they, you know, they open up and they interact and they you know, just have to be together. We do a lot together, you know, whether it's on the road or it's here, we are constantly together. And being aware of all the players on the team when you see them at school and picking them up and saying hi and really having our, you know, our juniors and seniors really focusing in on our freshmen and sophomores and building that culture of, hey, we're in this together, whether you're on JV or whether you're a role player on varsity. Everybody's responsibility is important and valued. And letting them have a voice, you know, letting them be heard. One of the things I really like to do, because I jump up and down very animated, I've heard and seen video, which I'm always not proud of. But a lot of times when we meet, it's like, all right, I sit down on the bench and everybody gets to do an impression of me. Mm-hmm. And so they feel comfortable making fun of me, which is actually reality, because probably most of that, well, they're very accurate on what they do, because I can picture some of it, and you know, people do video it and send it to me, so they're I think those things, when you're vulnerable as a coach and you allow kids to see that and to recognize, hey, you know, he's very intense and very much wants us to be successful, and sometimes that comes across as a negative at times, potentially, but then being able to say, to show it in front of everybody, and we laugh, and, you know, and for me, it's good because I see what they're seeing. I think you can get pretty focused in on what you're doing, and that's helped develop our culture as well. But we just do as much as we can together. We eat together. We watch games together. We do everything we can to support our younger players, our junior high players. We'll go to middle school games and cheer them on, and really just, you know, bond as much as we can for the small amount of time that we have. And that seemed to really bring, you know, our teams together in the past.
That's awesome. I'm curious, do the girls have any, so for myself, I call them doominism. So, like, you know, little phrases that I would say, they hear me say in practice all the time. Do you have any homonisms that the girls would say during their imitations of you?
Which I don't have the passion right now to say it you know, the way I would. One of my big things is I finish with "get it done." Mm-hmm. And so if I don't say that, they're like, "Hey, I think you're missing something tonight." All right. Most of mine are homonisms are jumping up and twirling. You know, it's more of my antics on the – I get very passionate and very – you know, you lose yourself in the game, and that's what I – that's another homonism, you know, is just lose yourself in the game, you know, just nothing around you. You're focused in, you know, and so that's one. But a lot of jumping up and down and spinning and I've actually tried not to do that, but it's really hard. So a lot of it's physical, what I do on the sideline. So
yeah,
I guess very comical.
Yeah. Well, I would say, Coach, that I've been told I do the same thing at times. So I'm with you in that club. I think you just, you know, you're passionate about the game, and sometimes you get lost in the game. I think that's a great way. Great way to describe it, right?
Right.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned, you know, your youth, junior high games, sub varsity. I want to talk to you just because at the 1A level, it looks very different than maybe what I deal with at a 5A level. So what kind of does your youth or sub varsity program look like, and how do you spend time to develop your players to help ensure, you know, future success?
Yeah, so coaching at the 1A level is a little bit different sometimes than the higher classifications in some aspects. I've coached teams where we didn't have enough players for a JV team. actually I've coached teams where we didn't have enough for a 5-on-5. And then I've coached teams where we've had enough for a JV and a JV2 team. So it's just important for us to, and our AD, our athletic director is very, he's very good to work with and understands every situation. And so our biggest thing is we need to get our kids court time. And so of a JV and a JV2 team, you know, really going out and getting those games for our kids that, you know, aren't playing a JV game. We don't separate our practices typically because, you know, for instance, last year I think we had 16 players or 17. And so we develop them all the same. It just might be a different level. So if we're doing a skill at one end, we may break them up into two sections and take the advanced kids and do a little bit more and have our younger players, work on getting that skill before we advance them. But we're all inclusive. We typically, you know, in the last few years haven't had enough to really separate. But we do, you know, whatever we can to get them on the floor. And then, you know, another thing, you know, for us, the summer, I've always appreciated the summer. It kind of feels like one of those times where you can get a lot of work done without the pressure of, hey, it's season, it's league, you know, all those expectations you put on yourself. And so we actually load up in our Suburbans and head to the coast. And the nice thing is when you call coaches and you say, hey, we're coming down, they'll normally make a time to play you because they don't have to do anything. And so we try to get our kids, so we try to get our kids out of the county, away from parents, which is part of our culture, too, to develop is, you know, it's just us. So how do we function as however many players? And you learn to, you know, to work through things that bug your, you know, struggles you may have. And so really focusing on what kids need specifically. But we, you know, we travel for 7 to 10 days. And pick up games and we'll meet with teams and do situational, stuff with different teams. And that's always good for us, you know, 10 seconds on the clock, you're down one and, you know, be able to run through those against not just, you know, your own team, but against a different team. But that 7 to 10 days is huge for us, to be able to really learn who we are. Learn where we want to go, get a snapshot for the upcoming season. And so we put a huge focus in the summer, even up until we leave for that trip. And kids, you know, we work around schedules because we want all of our kids to be able to come every day. And we treat it very much like the season. And the expectation or the hope is that kids buy in and they're there every day to put that work in. So we really, the summer to me is one of the biggest learning opportunities that we have as coaches, and a time that we look forward to kind of relaxing and not the pressure of the next game that counts, you know, for maybe a league championship or something like that. And then we also partner or have partnered with Enterprise. Coach Crawford's a good friend of mine. We play a lot of golf. And so we've done a tournament and clinics. We'll do clinics in the morning, and then games in the afternoon. You know, we've had upwards of 20 teams up here. They love to see the lake and, you know, go swimming, go, you know, whatever they want to do. And so really the off season, the summer is a time that we really put a lot of focus on and really developing. And you always do it during the season as well, but there's always different, you know, things that come up or you have homework or you have, you know, this is really that time where we can focus for the month of June, on getting better and putting that time in.
Yeah. I'm curious, what does your youth program look like? You're right. So I'm assuming just, you know, it's one charter school, you know, so I'm assuming you get to see those girls early and they probably all start and play on the same team for a while would be my guess. What does that look like? Do you do any recruiting at the younger levels? Is it one team? Do you get a couple teams? What does that look like?
Yeah, we were fortunate I don't know, a number of years ago, we hired our current boys basketball coach as our PE teacher. And so with our new practice facility, he's very good. I mean, he's basketball everything all the time. And so in our PE program, he takes our young kids and we can lower the hoops to 6 feet in our practice facility. And so we benefit by our PE teacher, boys basketball coach, you know, with our primary, those K through four kids, they do a lot of basketball and PE. Not that that's the only thing, but they, you know, that's definitely a unit he really likes. Kind of fourth, fifth, sixth grade, they have teams that they play on, for a couple months. And so we have people that coach those. And then we actually have our fifth and sixth graders a lot of years play with our middle school. And so they may, you know, the understanding is, you know, it's really middle school, but we're going to try to get you the playing, you know, playing time. But that certainly helps strengthen, you know, we catch them a little bit earlier. You know, we don't have like a YMCA league or anything around here. We're just so far away from anything like that. So, just getting our younger kids in the gym as much as we can. Our middle school has a good schedule and we set up, you know, a good schedule for them. And then we also try to incorporate our middle school into our high school and really try to, you know, bring, if they want to come to practice, if they want to be a manager, if they want to travel, you know, we'll take a couple with us to be in the locker room, to be at practice, to really get the culture that we're trying to create. And so we're constantly looking to how we can support those younger kids, but also include them and what we're doing as well to be a part of that.
That's awesome.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Holman right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Lance Holman. Coach, I want to talk about, you know, you mentioned being in Joseph. You're not real close to YMCA and leagues and things of that nature. And so for your league games, you travel quite a bit. How do you prepare your kids for that kind of travel, and how do you use that travel time maybe to your advantage in building that family culture?
Yeah, we when you grow up in Eastern Oregon, kind of where we are, you're used to traveling for everything, you know, whether you need to go to Walmart, you know, it's an hour and a half away. You want to go get McDonald's, it's an hour and a half away. Dutch Bros, which is big, you know, that's an hour. So everyone, you know, since you're, you know, our kids are young, they're always traveling. And so our youth sports, you know, baseball travels, LeGrand, like there's really nothing. You can play teams in our county, but you're looking at Enterprise, Willow and Joseph. And so our youth programs travel a lot. And so when they get to our level, they're pretty used to traveling and then playing a sport. And also at our level, almost all of our players, if not all of them, play other sports. And so they're constantly traveling. And so it's not unusual to jump on a bus on a Thursday and travel 2 hours and play a game and come home. So they're pretty familiar with that routine. We actually really take advantage of our travel between the summer that we do, traveling to the west side, and then our trips we have in our league or tournaments we go to in Portland and during the season. We do everything together. We eat together. We sit together. We watch film together. We do everything we can just to be together. And so I think when it comes down, when you get to the playoffs, you get to the postseason, those aren't new situations. You know, they're used to being on the bus for hours. They're used to not staying, you know, not seeing their parents for a couple nights. We have a very good routine of food, team building activities. You know, we're pretty familiar with that type of program. And so our kids, you know, not saying they like to travel, but it's not new. And I think they, to a certain extent, they appreciate that and being able to be together. It just strengthens our culture and the family aspect even that much more and reinforces what we're trying to do. I think, you know, one of the things our athletic director has done is talk to coaches and, you know, where we feel our teams are going to be and then try to go out and get a couple trips where we have to do that to ourselves. Because reality is, if you get in a state tournament or district tournament or playoffs, those are the things you're dealing with. And so our preseason really sets us up as far as travel and staying together. And that routine is pretty normal for us by the time we get to the postseason.
Yeah, when, you know, thinking about postseason and stuff, you guys could take a long trip, which, you know, you do in regular season as well. But I'm curious, how do you prep for those types of games, right? Yeah, so from your side of getting game film on the other team and, you know, you're probably leaving a day early, spending the night in the hotel. You know, how do you prepare for those long kind of playoff trips and the scouting that you need to do to prepare for playoff games?
Well, we have a tremendous amount of film, you know, kind of like probably everybody does. And so our routine doesn't necessarily change. It may just push the timeline to be a little bit shorter. And on those, you know, long bus rides, all of our film is uploaded. And so kids can take that time to watch. And then when we get to, you know, if we play the next day, then we'll do our team meetings and walkthroughs. You know, it could be at the hotel and the, you know, where you eat breakfast. But it really doesn't change. It just shortens your time frame to get ready. But we utilize every second that we can, or every, you know, second that is that they're not sleeping or, you know, mm-hmm. after Dutch Bros, those types of things. Try to create those times where we know we have their attention, which is definitely harder on the road. But it's no different than any other team. You know, we do what we can and fill our time as best we can with what we need to get done and get, you know, players, you know, what they need to look for, what players they need to, you know, so you're, it's just more conversation when it is in the gym. You know, it's always nice to be in the gym and be able to run through it, but we just utilize whatever space and whatever time we have the best we can to get ready for the next game.
Yeah, in a league schedule, are you still playing Friday night, Saturday night?
Yes, Friday night, yeah. Saturday night. Which, that's so how cool. I grew up in Enterprise, right. So going to Neocami playing Tuesday, Friday was a huge adjustment for my mindset.
Yeah, that felt weird for you, I'm sure. So how do you prep for that, for back-to-back nights? You're going to have two teams to prepare for in two nights. How do you kind of roll out game plan, scouting report for your kids going into a two games back-to-back?
Yeah, we will utilize film, you know, on our next two opponents. Sometimes we watch it as a team, sometimes just the coaches watch it and break it down, depending, you know, kind of who we're playing. And then basically, depending on what the week looks like as far as strength and schedule that week, a lot of times we try to keep preparation to Wednesdays and Thursday nights. But there are certain times you need to make more adjustments or change different things offensively or defensively. So we'll use the whole week. But we use film a lot. We, you know, our kids, can access the film whenever they want, and we will put out, you know, small scouting reports on what we're looking for and what players' tendencies are and who to watch out for. But that's typically what we do. We're not very big, so we haven't been very big for a while. So our what we're trying to do is different than we were bigger, you know, back when we won state championships. But the preparation's the same. It's just we may have to adjust more based on our size.
Right. Yeah. What do your film sessions look like? I think that's always can be tricky sometimes as coaches, and I've heard a lot of different ideas. You have them, you know, fill out a sheet to let them know that, let you know that they watch film. Some people do it together. Some people say don't go over 15 minutes. Some people, you know, say it's got to be during practice time. So what has worked for you? How do you set up your film to help prepare, you know, your players, have them get the most out of it, and set your team up for success?
Yeah, so we, you know, as coaches, watch all the film. But for our players, we're looking, you know, the 1A level, you know, typically you have a couple of really good players. You know, sometimes you have, you do have five, like Crane right now, or the past couple of years, have been 5 to 7 deep that could play, you know, at a very high level. And so for us, it's very short. Sometimes we watch it together, but sometimes film can be overwhelming. And so if we feel like it might be overwhelming, we'll do the scouting and then, you know, present how we're gonna go into the next couple games for that weekend. But we never want them to watch a lot of film. You know, I think it's one of those things when you see them on film or, you know, depending who the opponent is, you can get some misconceptions there. But really look at tendencies more than the output that somebody's done for that game. But we utilize it probably not as much as we could, just because, you know, personally, I worry that it could, kids can get caught up in the game and, be kind of awestruck at times. And so really just try to look at tendencies for players and then offensively what they do, but not in long spurts for sure. And we will watch it together because then we can kind of dictate what we want them to see. But again, it's readily available too. So
right.
Some can digest it easier and really keep it in perspective. And so those kids will typically watch more, but we don't encourage a lot of, you know, watching complete games.
Yeah, how about film of yourself, right? So as a teaching tool, do you use that often or what does that look like?
Yeah, periodically we do that, especially when there are things we really want to emphasize when we're struggling with a concept. Seeing, you know, watching when we did it correctly and watching when we didn't and why that happened. We watch it more on the defensive end to see our rotations and where we should be and where teams are hurting us. Not as much offensively. But we'll watch film. We used to do it every week. You know, I always think back to last year, and that was, you know, COVID year was a bit different. But typically, we'll watch film together about every other week, depending on who we played and things that we want that we've identified as something we need to work on. But also, you know, also look at the things we've done well and why they work. But typically, you know, on average, it's probably every other week together.
Perfect. You mentioned, Coach, the run you had. You had 3-year stretch where you played in the state title game, 3 consecutive years. I think you took second the first year, but then went back-to-back state championships, including an undefeated season, which I imagine was a pretty amazing run. For you as a coach, what was that experience like, and how did you handle the expectations with that team and the expectation to win and compete for state titles?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, I need to start off by saying how blessed, you know, I have been to to be able to coach the kids I've had or have now and have had in the past, and everyone that I've coached is, you know, always have a special place in my heart. So I know we had three very successful seasons there in a row, but I think it all started, I believe, 2005, 2006, when I first got to Joseph. My assistant coach, Karen Patton, which was Karen Butterfield when she went to school in Joseph, was on two of the undefeated teams that won state titles in the early 80s. And what we focused on, which really laid the groundwork to our success, were just putting in expectations, and we held kids accountable, not only for themselves, but for the team. And mentally, how I think is I just don't lose, whether I'm playing checkers with my kids or I'm playing in, you know, golf with my buddies. I don't lose. And that's the mentality I wanted them to have. I'm just very competitive. And this group was very similar, when we first got there the first year. We just had a couple of barriers to break through. And the first barrier was they hadn't won before. And so, you know, that first year was really raising the kids' expectations and believing they could win. And I firmly believe we had that success in year one. I think that team, my first year, finished fifth. And I don't know when the last time they were that Joseph made it to the state tournament. But they had to play through adversity, and there were tight games that we won several of them, and that breeds success. Like, they, you know, you can do it. You went up against the number one team in the state that year in North Powder, and we beat them. You know, those are things they hadn't experienced before, but that all laid the groundwork to where we were headed. And the second barrier was just bringing every one of our players into the family atmosphere and that culture we wanted, to truly buy into what we were doing. And so that first year, though, they don't get a lot of credit, because you know, the next 3 years we played in the state title game, but those kids, you know, those seniors especially, helped lay that groundwork for where we were headed. And part of the reason we were as successful as we were. And so I think that's the most important, is that first year of changing the culture and raising the expectations, and learning how to win that first year. And so then, you know, in 2007, you know, I was in my sixth year of coaching girls basketball and the fourth year as a head coach. And so, you know, you go through the season, and it was a super fun team. You know, but the bar had been raised from the previous year, and the kids really stepped up, and, you know, it was unfortunate to lose to St. Paul, very good team in St. Paul. Still know a lot of those players today, in overtime. But, you know, I think back as a coach, you know, I'm in year four as a head coach, total. And you get to that level, and you get to that game, and the gym is packed. There's people standing outside that aren't getting in. It's so electric. It's so loud. You can't hear yourself even think. And that's me as a, you know, as an adult trying to deal with everything that's going on. And looking back on it, you know, it's just so overwhelming. And I can't imagine what the kids were feeling at that time. So, I mean, it was disappointing to lose, but that again just kept raising the bar for our kids. And a very special year to finish second. But, you know, looking back, it was new for us. You know, no one had been there. And so I guess my assistant Karen had as a player. But it helped us, you know, prepare for the next years to come. And I think that team is just as important as the first team. I think it all builds on each other. And then in 2008, we were, you know, fortunate to finish a state champion. And this season was the first season in my career that I've allowed a team to make a goal that put a number on wins. And their goal was to go 30-0. And it's also the first time in my career I'm like, you're absolutely right. Like that's realistic. That should be your goal. And the team ended up 29-0. And so to this day, I talk to kids on that team, and they're still mad we had a game canceled because of weather. And I received more phone calls from the players like, schedule this team, get this team. We need to get this, like, just get them up here. We'll go there. We'll travel where we need to get to 30-0. And that was just the drive that the team had. That team in 2008, when we were undefeated, was very special. We had three kids, three players play college basketball. One had a full Division I offer, and then two played at the Division II NAIA level. And those kids, you know, just bent over backwards and were very selfless, as a team and really bought in, to what we were doing. And we were able to beat St. Paul, which was a matchup from the year before. Again, very talented. Still know all those players on St. Paul. But it was an amazing accomplishment, to finish undefeated, and one that, yeah, I think that might be the only year I know the record that we had. Because we didn't lose a game, and I remember it's only 29 because the game got canceled. And so that team's very special, for sure. But also, again, it goes back to the first year that I coached in Joseph and the groundwork that was set by the previous team. And then in 2009, you lose two players that are playing college basketball. And then this team had to, you know, you finished 29-0, well, you're still undefeated going into the 2008-2009 season. And so they had the burden of those wins, and we won several, and I couldn't tell you how many we won to start that season. But this team had to overcome more adversity than the previous year, and might have been even more special for me. Because again, last year was only my fifth year as a head coach. So, you have all that the state championship and everything goes with it. But I don't know if I really appreciated it, because it was so new and, you know, you just, and so 2009, I really focused on enjoying what we were doing and the process we were going through. And in that year, we played Crane in the first round. And we're down the whole game. And so, you know, it worked out that we came back and I believe went into overtime in that game and then won and ended up in the state championship. And our Division I recruit hit a baseline jumper, to win the game. And so, you know, as you get older, I hope that I've become more aware of what's going on around me and really focusing in on enjoying the moment. And so that one didn't mean more, but I took more in. You know, still not very old, but being able to share those moments and really soak it in. And that year I talked to a former player from Neocani to be my assistant, and she was so nervous that I kind of had her removed from the locker room because I didn't want her to get us all. I mean, she's a great lady and she was phenomenal, but she was making us all nervous. So we kind of had to, you know, get her out of the locker room for a little bit because we'd been there for, this was our third year in a row. So, you know, we were all ready to get the job done and she's just beside herself. I mean, it was, and so all those moments you just appreciate even more, especially as you get older, but also, you know, in the moment, just knowing how lucky you are to get there. And so those 3 years and every year is very special. But looking back on it, with the expectations, because there were big expectations for those teams as you start building that reputation and getting your players noticed and your team noticed. We focused in on small goals during those runs, individual goals for games, really taking just staying in the moment, because the expectations were so high and the pressure was enormous, but really bringing kids down, to reality that, hey, it's just basketball. We're here. We get to do this. It's fun. We're a family. We're going to do it together. We had several guest speakers come in that had dealt with adversity and high expectations. Some of the speakers responded positively to those pressures, and some, you know, kind of negatively to those pressures. And so getting our kids to see both sides of that, we did a lot of that, had several people come in and talk to our team. We focused very much on being a family and keeping things within, but also creating an environment where we could talk about it. You know, what's everybody feeling? And so you can really hone in on different situations or different feelings that are out there, and bringing it back down to, you know what, it's basketball. We're still going to fill the ball up, and you're going to play the same thing that you played yesterday. So we really just tried to keep kids in the moment and made small goals for each game, you know, for that particular game, and tried to have a very clear perspective on really it's just basketball. I mean, my saying is always it's just basketball. You know, that's the easy part is you get to roll a ball out and play basketball. And so keeping it that simple, not making it bigger than it needs to be.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's...
And really, I didn't want to mess it up, so that's also...
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably really easy to do that, so...
Yeah, that's the best coaching move you could have made, right? Just get out of the way.
Right.
And let them play basketball.
Yeah.
For sure. Because I think you got to get that 29-0 team back for an alumni game and tell them that's their chance. Get the band back together. You'll count it as 30-0. An alumni game, and they can go out with their 30th win. What do you think?
You know, unfortunately, I think it would be scary.
Yeah.
They've actually talked about it. I talked to them.
Okay.
I talked to them quite a bit, and they would actually love to do that. And I keep telling them, you know, you're not 18 years old, 18 years old. You've had kids. But it's just, you know, it's one of those groups too that they're so competitive that they would probably break a leg to try to get it done.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, we're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Holman will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, save the date. The 2021 OACA OBCA Nike Basketball Coach of the Year Clinic will be held Friday, October 8th at Liberty High School. Also, plan to join us for the second annual OBCA Golf Tournament Saturday, October 9th at the OGA Golf Course in Woodburn. You can find more information at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Lance Holman. He's the girls' basketball coach at Joseph High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock. So I'm going to put about 35 seconds on a timer, and I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions that should have 1 to 2 word answers. And we're going to see how many questions you can get through in 35 seconds. Sound good?
Okay. Yep.
All righty. 35 seconds on the clock, starting now. Do you think Oregon High School basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds on the clock, do you foul?
No.
How big of a lead do you need before you pull off a press?
20.
What's your favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
I like to try to jump the screen.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Caddyshack.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Fiery.
Fiery time. That's good. I like that. That's another new one. I haven't heard fiery yet. Nice job. Good possession, Coach. Well done. Well done. So we call it the shot clock segment. I'm sure you're aware shot clock's kind of a hot topic issue the state of Oregon across the country for high school basketball. You mentioned you're in favor of the shot clock. Can you elaborate on why?
I just think, you know, possession-wise, it would be nice. You know, there's a difference between girls' basketball and boys' basketball on how the game's played. I think it would allow for potentially more possessions. That's a good question, too, because I haven't thought a lot about it. And the end of the game situation, you know, if you have a team that takes care of the ball really well, it just forces the, you know, more possessions for the end of the game to see how it would play out. I just have always been in favor of it. But that's a good, I haven't thought about that question for, since before COVID. So, yeah,
it's been on the back burner, right? There's other things to think about. Yeah, no question. What are some stats that you or maybe your assistant keeps during the game that you use to maybe monitor performance and how your team's doing?
We track, we look to track deflections, turnovers, shot selections, and rebounds. Are the main stats that we look at. We're not very big, so we need to try to come close to the rebounding battle. And we know, you know, if we can do that and win the turnover battle, we will be, you know, successful. We also know shot selection and different zones or man, you know, where we're getting them. Cause we know if we can score 45 points, we can be in, if not, you know, almost every game, if not every game. And so those are four that we look at each game and we go off of that we emphasize.
Sure. Coach, you've gotten to coach both sides. You said West Side on the coast, out in Joseph. I think there's some probably really cool gyms in the state of Oregon that many coaches have never gotten to see, excluding Joseph, of course, because I'm sure that's the nicest gym you've been in, Coach. What's a really cool gym that basketball junkie coaches should go see somewhere in the state of Oregon?
Well, I will say, since I cannot say Joseph, we had a fire January 2019 in our gym, so a couple months before COVID hit. I think it was it 19 or 19? And so now our gym has been gutted and redone, so it's a mess. The floor is beautiful, has mountains in it, and so I can't say that one, but I think every team should travel to North Powder and play in there. They have recently built a new gym, so the old gym is used, not as much, of course, as the new gym. But it has the wood rafters above the gym that go not all the way around, but three sides, kind of a U shape. And it's literally above the gym. So they look down on you. And it's a small gym. So it's tight and there's very little seating behind the benches and on the other side, you know, across from the benches. But it's a gym that I've lost a lot of games in and I've won games in, but probably the coolest old, just one of those that when you walk into, there's history there. And there's a reason they're successful in that gym, not only because of the way it's built, but also how the fans are on top of you. But yeah, very nostalgic, it's a treasure. I mean, it really is a treasure. It's not that I want to play there ever again, because I've taken, you know, some lumps there. But it's definitely very nostalgic and historic for sure.
That's awesome. I like it. What's the strangest thing you've ever seen in a basketball gym? So, you know, something with strange situation or scenario or the ball bounced funny. Anything like that?
I I don't really, but I will say, and actually it's one of the coolest experiences I've been in, so not really strange, but we played a playoff game in Mohawk out of Eugene, east of Eugene. So we warmed up, you know, all that's normal, do our division series lineup, and then we get to Mohawk, and it was like the Chicago Bulls with the lighting and the, you know, when Jordan was playing. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about intimidating. It wasn't strange. It's extremely impressive and actually extremely intimidating. So that's not really strange, but something that I'll never forget. It was impressive.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. That's cool that you get to do that for their kids too. Yeah. I want to go back to the fire, coach. I mean, you know, fire in your gym in the middle of basketball season. I mean, how did you do with that?
It's still pretty. I mean, that day is still, you know, still etched in our minds. But we reached out to local schools and Enterprise being six miles away. They offered up as much gym time as they could, and you know, we of course scheduled around their schedules, which we should. But they were very, very welcoming to us. We played our home games in Enterprise, which is where I played in high school, so that was kind of cool. But that's kind of how we got through it. Enterprise was generous enough to allow us to practice and play home games there. We actually had to play a home game in Embler. But all of Eastern Oregon reached out to us and offered up what they could. And we had donations from every school. It really, as big of a negative as it was, it turned out to be just one of those positive experiences you can't replace, and you can't thank everybody enough for how gracious they were to us during that time, and we would certainly, you know, hope to do the same, you know, if another school was in that situation. But it was tough. It was tough to not have a home court feeling. It was tough to not practice in your gym. But we couldn't be more thankful for Enterprise and how they treated us and accepted us in their facility.
That's awesome. That's very cool. How do you go about selecting your team captains? What does that process look like?
The process is observations throughout the years, and not just on the court playing basketball, but how kids interact with all of the team, how they carry themselves off the court. You know, being a small school, I talk to every kid kindergarten through 12th grade every day. And so just looking for those kids that exemplify what you're looking for in a captain. And that's kind of how we select our captains.
I like it. Do you give them any specific jobs or responsibilities as a captain?
Yeah, so I'm big on traditions. And so one of the things, like with our family culture, is developing traditions that each team does before games. And so our captains, you know, work to implement what sometimes they use the year before, because it's something that's superstitious and they've, you know, worked. And but given the responsibility to come up with those things, they mentor our younger kids. They do a lot of the talking. We just ask them to be our voice too, and communicate with us and as coaches. But really just, really not change what they're doing, but just raise that expectation a little bit and be more aware of how they carry themselves and be more aware of the team and where they're at and pick kids up. And, so we just, you know, we look for them to do a lot of the things that we can't do as coaches.
You talked a lot about spend a lot of time together in your family culture. I'm curious if there's one team bonding activity that you do that is maybe your favorite or just you really enjoy doing with your team.
My favorite, I talked about a little bit earlier, is having them each act out me. I think it allows, you know, them to really share their feelings, and it allows me to assess what they're seeing from me. And so sometimes, you know, when they act out me, I'm like, ooh, yeah, that, you know, I need to work on this. It's really humbling and quite embarrassing, but yet tells a lot to our team and to our coaches what they're seeing that I'm doing without them having to verbalize it. That's probably the most powerful, because if they can see me in that way, then it can help break down some of the barriers in the communication that they may have if they're scared or nervous or, you know. And so that's been one of my favorites, because it's a good reminder how foolish I look at times, but also, you know, what kids see and if there are things that I need to work on without them telling me, but actually acting it out. So that's probably the most powerful thing we do.
Do you have a favorite drill that you do? It doesn't have to be every day, but that girls like and that you think helps your team?
Yeah, we do a drill called Oklahoma, and it includes, you know, passing, shooting, lay-ins, footwork, and it's full court for 5 minutes. I love it because it's goal-oriented, and if you don't meet your goal, you know, there's consequences to that, and then we do it again, and we up the goal. And to me, it's not only basketball, but it's life, and so how do you deal with those adversities of we didn't accomplish something, or we didn't do it good enough, or, you know, we need to work on this, and so that's a drill we do every day, and you know, it's 5 minutes, and we keep score, and we keep track of everything. And so that drill, you know, in years past, we've done for almost an hour. And so basically it's a full court drill for an hour for those kids while the goal keeps going up, because we never settle. So we're not going to quit something, and we're not going to lower our goal because we can't meet it. We're going to, you know, and so that's my favorite. And a lot of times, most days you go through it, you meet your goal. And then the next day we make the goal higher. You know, you're constantly pushing that bar and raising the expectations. But it's such a good drill because it's just like life. You know, you have the days that are easy, and then the next day, you know, you're struggling to fit. And so eventually you have to work through those things together. You can't do it by yourself. And that's my favorite drill that we do every day.
I know this will be tricky, probably, Coach, over the phone and podcast, but can you kind of describe to me what Oklahoma drill looks like?
Yeah, so it's probably, you know, a lot of teams use it. We just call it Oklahoma. But there are lines at each baseline in the corners on both sides, and then a person starts out underneath the basket on one end, and every line has a ball. So there's five balls that will be in play. The person under the basket makes the outlet pass, who passes it across court for the lay-in. And the two that don't shoot the lay-in that were part of the passing then receive a ball from the two baseline corners and shoot a shot that we would want them to shoot outside the key. And then whoever shoots the lay-in makes the outlet pass to somebody who made a pass from the baseline, and the other one goes and shoots the lay-in. And so it's just a continuous drill. And then we keep track of points and how many missed lay-ins and, you know, set a goal for what we're going to reach. And that's probably not a great explanation, but that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. We do a similar drill. So I think I know what you're talking about with that, which is, do you count the jump shots as one point, or do you count those as two?
They're all 1 point.
Okay. Gotcha.
And if they miss the lay-in, we run for that too.
Right. And what is the first drill or the first day you do that? What's the goal?
Well, the first day we don't have a goal because we've learned over the years that the first day is really not very fluid. So we give them a couple days to practice, and then we, you know, of course, start a little bit lower, and then, you know, work up from there.
Right.
But it takes a couple days to kind of get into it and teaching and reviewing, and then get moving from there.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, Coach, I think that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for putting this on. I've been listening to the podcast since you reached out to me, so I appreciate what you're doing and hearing from all the other coaches around the state.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Holman, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.